improve the quality of these programs as well as to increase the number of graduates. There's a big demand for computer and engineering graduates in the state. Currently, high-tech companies have to go out of the state and even out of the country to fill vacancies. So it is hoped that this funding will at least help this effort in some manner. Secondly, there is $7.2 million to expand higher education opportunities in Central Oregon. It is expected that during the 2001-03 biennium, from 400 to 700 students will be served with this funding and expansion of higher education in Central Oregon. Thirdly, there's $17 million for enrollment growth. And lastly, there's $8 million to provide a sound revenue base for small schools. Now, let me talk about the reductions. There is elimination of supplemental funding for individual campuses to collaborate with community colleges as well as other campuses. This is just like you heard about with regards to community colleges. This reduction is for $2.8 million. There's a reduction of $20.3 million from the budgets of statewide public services and campus-based public services. This will especially affect the statewide public services at Oregon State University. This is the Ag Experimental Station, Extension Services, and Forest Research Lab. There's a reduction of $15.7 million from centralized services and administrative expenses. There's a reduction of $2.5 million from support for non-resident master's students.
Yes, Senator.
I wonder that reduction, 15.7, for centralized services administrative expenses seems a rather large amount for that. Do we have a breakdown of that? Is there envision being cut out if you do that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Trull, there are three components to that.
Uh-huh.
There is $5.3 million from centralized services. This is a 10% reduction of centralized services budget. And what this would do is this would eliminate duplication of services, transfer functions from the chancellor's office to the campuses.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the $5.3 million. There's $5.4 million reduction for services and supplies. The overall general...
Does that go out to each of the institutions and services and supplies?
That would also go out to each of the institutions, yes.
Okay. What else?
And there's a $5 million reduction of personal services.
And that's a cut in staff?
That would be cutting staff, not filling vacancies.
You know which staff? It's in the administration part? Is it in the chancellor's office, in the individual institutions? How does that work out?
You know, I think it would come from everywhere.
Thanks.
Yes, Senator Yee.
Sahish, can you tell us how many graduates will we be able to provide if we add $20 million to improve engineering education?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I don't have the exact numbers, but what this $20 million will do is it'll improve the quality of the program as well as, I think the goal is to double the number of graduates. Right now there are two proposals in front of the State Board of Higher Education. The details are still being worked into.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up question. So when you have details, will you give us the information?
Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to know, is this going to take 4 years before we see the increase in graduates? If we add the money now, is it going to take 4 years to have the increase in graduates?
Theory, I would think it would, but again, it would depend on which proposal the board goes or moves forward with.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we have the information, we'll provide that to you.
When do you think you have the information?
Senator Yee, we should have the information, hopefully some kind of information, before the subcommittee hearings are over, or during the hearings.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Also on the statewide services, I wonder, have we sort of assessed the economic impact of making those kinds of cuts in those programs in terms of what it might mean and how cost-effective that might be. These programs basically reach out to the rural part of the state, which is really hard-pressed economically and need help in many ways. I'm just wondering how cost-effective it might be to cut those programs when one of the emphases I think we have basically is to try to help that part of the state.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Senator Truhl, these were tough choices. We had to come with a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were, choices that basically I think the governor was forced to make.
Okay. A lot of those, one-time enhancements of research people and there's an investment in personnel and in research activities and so forth that will just go away if the money goes away.
That is true, Mr. Truhl. That's it.
Continue.
He's the messenger.
What?
He is the messenger.
I know he is the messenger. I'm trying to make a point for the record.
I noticed. Then the other reductions include a reduction of state support for research. There's a $10 million reduction. This is equivalent to 59%. Reduction of state subsidy to veterinary and pharmacy programs. This is $2.8 million. What this reduction would do is that it would provide the same amount of state subsidy as is provided to law students. And there's a reduction of a reserve, $2.1 million for unanticipated system-wide needs.
This question,
Mr.
Johnson.
Chair?
Yes.
Down there.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Johnson.
A question about the cuts to the veterinary and pharmacy programs. What does that do to those programs? Because I understand that the veterinary program has been systematically reduced over the last period of history. What does a $2.8 million loss do to those programs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what this will do is basically what we are looking at is from state dollars point of view. Right now, for a master's student in the veterinary program, I think the state dollars per student that is spent is around $32,000. And for a law student, it's around $10,000. So it would decrease the funding. University system needs to look at alternate ways of funding it, if they can.
But I guess, Mr. Chair, follow-up question?
Certainly.
I guess what I'm asking is, does this have the net effect of killing these two programs?
Frankly, Representative Johnson, it may do that, but I think the system of higher education needs to see if there are alternate sources of funding.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, we will have an opportunity to look at an $8 million request for the School of Veterinary Medicine, which will enhance it in a number of ways. But this amount would not eliminate this reduction would not eliminate the school.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Scott. I think it would pose a substantial problem because these programs cost a lot more than educating an attorney. These are expensive programs. You have to have expensive labs. You have to do expensive research. These are not the same programs as law school training. And so why you would equate them as, I don't know. They're not the same.
It
don't cost the same.
It does not cost.
You might equate it with the medical school and the cost of training a medical doctor. That there's some similarity there, but there's not a lot of similarity there with a law student.
Thank you. Continue.
And the last reduction is a reduction of $1.3 million that was supposed to be a carry forward for the Smart Jitney program. Besides that, there's one more. There's an additional reduction of $25.2 million general fund, which is expected to be offset with a 4% increase in tuition.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, why is the Smart Jitney program under the higher education budget?
Mr. Chair,
you were all here last time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I think Representative Hayden, I apologize. One reason for that, I believe, is this project is supposed to raise venture capital, and it turned out that at that time, higher education was the only state agency that had the ability to do that.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Chairman, if I can comment, after 12 years on the Transportation Committee, I saw some value in this program. I sort of hate to see it eliminated.
We'll have a chance to look at it again and some more. Any other questions? Are you done, sir?
I'm done.
Thank you very much, and of course we'll have you back again many times in more detail, and thank you. And Steve, are you completed?
I'm afraid so.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, will there be an opportunity to see the rest of the proposal? I know that we have a very tight schedule for the state agency briefing, but in order to finish up this comprehensive look, especially for those of us that are new to this process, should we go directly to Mr. Bender, or could Mr. Bender come back at the beginning of one of the other briefings and finish his presentation?
Steve, what do you want to do?
I'm certainly up to whatever you would like. I know that the co-chairs are trying to move this process along. And I will forward your request to them and see if we can accommodate that. Also, we will be doing, I spoke with Senator Hartog, and he has agreed to the orientation and education subcommittee the first day that that meets. And we will certainly cover that then if they're able to attend that.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it would be wonderful if you could let us know when that meeting is scheduled to take place.
Right. We will notify all the members of the subcommittees, regardless of which subcommittee they're on, if they're not on full ways and means.
And I will bring a request to you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's a good suggestion. Any other questions? Steve, do you have anything else for us? We are adjourned.
Thank you.
We're sitting there.
Ways and Means Full Committee, yeah. Friday, January 12, 2001, 8:30 a.m., Hearing Room F.
So, I want all of the members who are on my committee to know that I do start on time. it's a product of one of being, having your own business and also having to have sat on the other side. You know, I was thinking about that this morning, and I was thinking about the days when I was here, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and when... we lost power.
Is that part of California?
Or did someone hit
the light?
Somebody hit the light switch.
There we go.
Thank you. Oh no, it's something else that's going on.
Looks like there's light outside though on the other hallway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking how, you know, coming before this august group in those days, and I can remember Stafford Hansel and how frightened I was to sit over there on that side to come to ask for money. I don't want you to feel frightened.
don't
ask for money. We have a full overview this morning. We will be going through the human services programs, and I would ask the members of this august panel to please, if you have any questions, either to write them down, but please save them, because as you know, this is probably one of the committee that has probably the most intricate details and also one of the most important services that we provide to the citizens of this state. And time is of the essence this morning, so I have said to staff that we would try to get through this in a very orderly and rapid fashion. So with that, Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is John Britton, and I work at the Legislative Fiscal Office. At my side is George Naughton, who works for the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management Division. And as yesterday's presentation was, this one will be as well. This is going to be a joint presentation between the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Budget Management Division of DAS. We are going to be talking this morning about the Human Services Program area. You can see on the slide that there are a number of agencies within this program area: the Commission for the Blind, State Commission on Children and Families, Disabilities Commission, Insurance Pool Governing Board, Long-Term Care Ombudsman, Psychiatric Security Review Board. But the most, the largest agency in terms of budget and complexity in terms of programs is the Department of Human Services. The human services cost drivers: population growth, that's a pretty obvious one. As our population in Oregon grows, we have more human services issues. More specifically, the growing numbers of elderly persons and disabled persons. Healthcare costs, specifically as they relate to the Oregon Health Plan. And the impact of alcohol and drug abuse in our state, and federal policies and funding levels. In a moment, you'll see that federal funds comprise a large portion of this budget. So when Congress or one of the executive agencies makes decisions, those decisions affect us keenly. And as budget analysts, we try and keep track of what's going on in Congress and in the executive branch of the federal government. Human services program is 23% of the overall state general fund and lottery expenditures. That percentage has remained fairly steady, although it looks as though it has dropped in the early part of the 90s, and then this current biennium and the next one will go up a little bit to 22 and 23% of the overall state general fund.
Madam Chair, this is where I kind of take over, and we want to take just a second
of its expenditures
to give you a flavor of how we
fund.
And the governor's
majority
side
of
made the decisions that we
are
did come up with the budget
funds
that you will see in front of you and spend
and those are,
many,
things
many months
such as
discussing
loans and grants that go to communities.
We have, from the very moment that this budget was released,
this
have characterized it as a budget of opportunities and risks. On the opportunity side, on the statewide, you will see that the governor has invested, excuse me, heavily into the prevention side, especially focusing on children in the early stages of their development. You'll see that with the Department of Education, with the quality education model. In the human resource program area, you'll see that with the Oregon Children's Plan, which will focus resources onto children from the very moment that they're born to try and raise them so that they're healthy. You also see risks, though, with a very tight budget and trying to be good stewards of the citizens' money. You will see that we have had to make some demands on this system, which it may not be used to. There's a lot of changes here, and it's fairly aggressive at organizational and system change, which you'll see throughout the system. To start with, you will see a major reorganization of the Department of Human Services, which will be presented to you. You will see a public welfare system that will demand better integration among partners both within the Department of Human Services and out in the local communities, and we will have a children's welfare system that will be much more proactive, we hope, and will get in to help families before they reach real crisis levels. There are also difficult choices. Even with all those, with those risks, there are difficult choices that arise out of it. You will see real cuts in this budget. You will see programs that are no longer there anymore. You will see clients that do not receive services if this budget is passed the way it's been recommended. Those have been very difficult choices, and as you see on this display, we started out with a series of principles that would help guide us through that process. The first one is that our function here, we believe, is to make clients as independent and productive as their abilities would allow them to be. The second one is that we would maintain a system, a safety net system, that is based on financial need and social vulnerability. With the senior, for example, which is my system I deal with primarily, among others, you will see that we have eliminated services based on the clients that are the least impaired and may have the most opportunities with their own resources or with other opportunities that they would be able to provide services for themselves or access those systems. The third one that you'll see here is that we have focused on reducing preventable costs and those investing in those areas that can provide us with the greatest paybacks over time. And finally, that we would maintain service capacity wherever we could. We try and avoid thinning the soup and remain or retain access for clients wherever possible.
We're going to begin our discussion with the Department of Human Services. As I said, this is the largest agency within this program area, the most complex. We have four analysts within the Legislative Fiscal Office that deal with this department. I'm one of them. Sheila Baker will be talking in a moment. Rick Olson, and our lead analyst on the topic or this subject area is Peggy Archer, who is also one of our deputies at the Legislative Fiscal Office. And Peggy is in working with the co-chairs this morning. On the DAS side, we have George Naughton, Dave Fazier, Kelly Friels, and George Dunford. And three of those folks will be here talking about the governor's recommended budget for these divisions and offices. We have the Adult and Family Services Division, Office of Services to Children and Families, Voc Rehab Division, and so on. I'm not going to read them all, but suffice it to say that this is a broad spectrum of the kinds of programs. This agency is currently working on a reorganization, so next biennium or at the end of this biennium, this may be reshuffled and the department may look structurally different, but the programs that are contained in these divisions and offices will be hopefully pretty much intact. This is a slide that shows the sources of funds, the total budget, $8.4 billion. As I noted a moment ago, federal funds comprise a significant portion, in this case 58% of the overall budget. General fund and lottery expenditures, $2.6 billion or 32% of the pie. And other funds, $883 million, about 10% of the overall funding sources for this agency. I should note that within the general fund and lottery comprises only about $6.2 million. So it is not a significant funding source for this department.
Mr. Britton, you might want to explain the source of the other funds for members of this panel.
I will, Madam Chair. There are a number of sources of other funds, and we will be covering those in more detail as we hit each division, but they range from anything related to, I'm thinking particularly of one of my agencies, Senior and Disabled Services Division, where we have client contributions to estate collections, all kinds of, there's a wide variety, license fees, things like that. And we'll be touching on those as we hit each division as we go through, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
This is the last slide related to the overall Department of Human Services. And what we wanted to illustrate here was that over 80% of the general fund really lies in three of the agencies within the Department of Human Services: the Senior and Disabled Services Division, the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Services Division, and the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, the Oregon Health Plan. So you can see that about 80% of the overall general fund is within those three divisions. The other significant general fund is in the Adult and Family Services Division and Services to Children and Families. One note or one footnote to this is that within the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division is about $145.9 million that is tied into the Oregon Health Plan. So keep that in mind as we go through.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. How much did you say that was?
About $145.9 million.
45 of the 774?
Correct.
Okay.
our general structure for this morning's talks on each division will be at least to describe very, very briefly what each division does, what their programs are, to talk about funding sources. The DAS analyst will then talk about the governor's budget. The Adult and Family Services Division, it's
Madam
main...
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Would you prefer that the questions be about the whole department be held to the end?
I would prefer that you hold them to the end, that you write them down, and if at the end we don't get to them, that you meet with the analyst afterward.
Thank you.
The Adult and Family Services Division has for many years been our welfare agency. Within recent years, its goal has been to help clients achieve self-sufficiency economically. To that end, they have a number of programs, cash assistance programs, training programs to help persons get off the cash assistance caseloads and find meaningful employment, child care assistance so that when persons leave the cash assistance roles they find work, they have a good place for their children to be while they are working, emergency assistance, food stamps. The food stamp program is located in here, and in a moment you'll see the funding sources for that program. Prevention services. This is a new program to the Adult and Family Services Division. By that, we are talking about primarily teen pregnancy prevention. These services used to lie in the Health Division, and they were moved during the interim to the Adult and Family Services Division, or a portion of those services were. Right now, teen pregnancy prevention services also are in Health Division. They are in this division, and they are also obviously within our educational system. During the interim, we have been working on an audit or a review of children's programs. One of our preliminary recommendations has been that we at least have a presentation on all programs that relate to this topic. And so with the Madam Chair, when we get to the subcommittee, that is one of our suggestions, that we have at least one day to talk about the span of teen pregnancy programs throughout the state, not just within the Department of Human Services. AFS also determines eligibility for the Oregon Health Plan, and finally, it operates the Child Support Program with the Department of Justice. When I say operates, it really is housed within the Department of Justice, but the funding comes through AFS. The sources of funding for the AFS budget: general fund, about 17% of a $1.2 billion overall budget. You can see a significant portion called non-limited federal funds. These are food stamp benefits, and they are not capped by the federal government. If a person qualifies for food stamp benefits, they are entitled to receive them. And for budget purposes, we identify an amount, but it is not a legally capped amount. In other words, it fluctuates throughout the course of the biennium. Other funds, $120.3 million. Federal funds, $439 million. Most significantly of the federal funds is the federal
one is one reduction that we have for this agency. To pick up where Sheila was with the Staley v. Kitzhaber lawsuit, and just to boil this down, the U.S. Supreme Court has basically created an entitlement for developmental disability services, and that's what we're trying to incorporate here, is how we implement that. It has a very large price tag, but on the human side of this, These are people that have gone without services for many, many years, and it is a real benefit to them because they'll be able to have universal access for all clients. They'll have in-home supports if they need them, and for those that some of those that are in the most need, we'll actually be able to move them into homes, similar to what other clients may be receiving. The next item, the children's mental health, you'll see for $4 million. That one is really to move about 65 children out of the Oregon State Hospital and into the least restrictive environments out in the community. We are looking at that as a real opportunity. You do need to be aware that the cause of action with the Staley v. Kitzhaber lawsuit all ties back to a Supreme Court decision called Olmstead. And you will hear discussions about Olmstead as we go through this biennium. And basically the theory is that there are people out there who are in more restricted environments, for example, at the state hospital, who could be served in the community. And if that is their situation, that they should be served out in the community, or we are violating their rights under Medicaid law. So that is an area that, as we move clients out of the mental health the institutions, the Oregon State Hospital, for example, that is in the back of our mind as we're trying to plan around these things.
Madam Chair, I can't let that comment pass without at least recognizing the irony of our last conversation, where you're talking about this case saying clients served in more restrictive environments and the need to move them into the community, otherwise we're violating their rights. And the discussion about Oregon